time, ladies and gentlemen. This will be the free-for-all segment, where you can just fire away with anything and let it rip, because there's a lot of questions I even want to ask. But I can only get a couple of, because I never.
Well, what is it? Doesn't Gary Bettman charges quite a lot for a franchise, doesn't he? I mean, more than any other sport, my understanding. Something like $70 or $60 million.
$65 million was, I think, the last one.
And right. That's got to be higher than most, if not all, the other leagues. Is that correct?
I don't know. I haven't really looked at it, and it's something I probably will be though.
That money goes to who? The money goes to the other owners, correct?
Mm-hmm. I know based on revenue, it's the highest percentage, guys, by far and away.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure based on revenue.
The percentage is 4 or 5 times the amount of the other three leagues. The other one that I wish that we had gotten into during the live portion of the show, but it was touched on by everybody, and this is kind of funny how this works. We all kind of touched on the fact that the gate revenue is so dependent for this league. It's so tied in. And the number that Forbes came up with is mind-boggling. It's a straight 50%.
Mm-hmm.
50% that's far higher than any of the other leagues. That's higher than the MLS.
That's where half the revenue comes from?
Yeah.
That's where half
the
revenue comes
from? Half the revenue is from your gate.
Hmm. Wow.
And I know Mike said, and I completely agree with him, some of the other writers as well, you cannot have a viable league, period, with that high of a percentage. It's as he said, it's amazing that this league made $3.3 billion last year.
Well, and that's why it's so important that they get this TV rolling. You know, they need a new TV deal. They have that TV deal in place right now, but they have to continue to get that to expand over time.
Well, that's right. And you can't, but you have to play hockey more than, you know, a few years without losing a season, you know.
Right.
Exactly. You can't perpetuate the same behavior over and over. Sorry, guys, one thing I want to say was just to go back on your point about the expansion fees, there actually was $80 million for Nashville, Atlanta, Columbus, and Minnesota.
I thought so.
That's what
good Lord.
I knew it was
that's
high.
Just the franchise fee.
San Jose, Anaheim, that's Ottawa, Tampa Bay, or Florida.
Oh, jeez. I mean, that's
so it's huge.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit overvalued. I mean,
it's a lot
sounds like a lot
of buying an existing team, that's for sure. I mean, the majority of teams that you're going to be able to buy will be anywhere between $150 and maybe $250 million.
Okay, but when you buy those teams, you're buying everything. You get the team. But when you buy a franchise, you're basically buying the right to build a team. Isn't that correct? I mean, now you have to come up with you have all sorts of other expenses now. I mean, it seems to me that in the short, at least in the maybe in the long run, let's see. It seems like it'd be easier and better off for anybody to buy a team, an existing team, and not try to build a franchise, starting with that kind of fee. I mean, that kind of money right off the top is a lot to lose.
It depends on your situation. If you're in a city where you own the basketball team, where there's an NBA team and you own the basketball team, or and now you can get you either own or can get ownership of the arena. That's a different ball game,
right.
But it seems like in Columbus and Nashville and so forth and so on, where they don't have an ownership interest in the arena, it's a whole different ball game. In fact, Columbus, they just did the deal last year, which got their whole lease arrangement even close to what other teams have had all along. So, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, so I would expect to see their financial performance improve a lot because they had no ownership interest, none of the revenue. They didn't have, and stuff like that, yet they were paying a lot of the boat for maintaining the arena. It was just a function of what happened at the time with franchises being awarded. A lot of stuff was done very quickly by necessity, and that shit happens. But
right.
So maybe in the long term, CBA is not going to work. The thing that probably will work in the long term is if they actually go to a system where they're sharing revenue, true shared revenue, meaning
right.
all 30 teams bring in X amount of dollars, and at the end of the day, it's all split up equally. I don't know how the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to feel about that, the Chicago Blackhawks, the Vancouver Canucks, et cetera, et cetera. However, that may be the only way it's going to work if you really look at it. And I mean, that's
right.
the,
I mean,
that's
in order to sustain a 30-league team.
Yeah, the NFL essentially splits everything amongst all the teams, and that's how it works. That's why you don't have these teams that are losing millions, millions, and millions, and tens of millions of dollars.
Despite being terrible every year.
They hate River League as well, but they split those revenues. It doesn't matter.
How did they reach this? How did they I mean, in other words, this sounds like something that I would just assume that most people would not find to be the most agreeable situation. I mean, especially if you are a big money-making team and you're responsible for a lot of that income. I don't see how, what do they have, 28, 30 teams in football? I don't see how they were able to come to that conclusion, because I just don't see the hockey owners
well,
doing that.
I think with that, but remember, with the NFL, you're dealing with 16 dates a year, okay?
Yep.
Most places don't have a problem selling at or near, you know, capacity, mm-hmm. and that fluctuates as teams get good and get bad, you know. So you've got that huge amount of television money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, it's a hell of a lot. You got a lot more to play with, and you can afford to be a lot more creative because everybody's going to make their scratch at the end of the day.
Exactly. That's why I keep saying the real thing is television contracts. That's really what's going to make this league grow. That's where the money's
right.
going to come from.
But I think if
you
find a way to, I've toyed with the idea. I've got an article that's sort of in my, you know, in the brain stages right now. But you know, what if you made the employees, the players, employees of the league instead of the individual teams, and you know, actually had the league,
like a centralized negotiator for their contracts or something?
Well, no, I mean, they would be those employees, and you get more to a standardized kind of tiering system for the players. You know, if you're, salary bands, if you want to
mm-hmm.
be that way, and then teams would have a budget that they could spend, discretionary budget for performance bonuses and so forth and so on, but. I haven't fleshed it all out yet, and I don't know whether it would make any difference in the long term. But the problem is you just don't have enough operational revenue for. I mean, how do you have a situation where you went to war the last time because of this? So you say to the players, okay, we're going to give you 57% of revenue, okay, but the cap increased 80%. Over that period of time. So, I mean, none of the numbers match up. I mean, you hear everybody talking about stuff, but if you sit down and look at it, none of the numbers match up. I mean, the cap went up 80%. You know, total player expenses for all teams went up 25%, 26% during the time of the contract.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so what did the owners say? I mean, the problem is, again, it's that, you know, the guys at the top who were paying Sakic $18 million, they saved some money.
Now you guys got to remember the reason why they paid him $18 million.
You had a hot
wife. All I have to do is go across the river and look at some guy named James Dolan.
Gee, you don't think they would have they wouldn't have paid him $18 million if the Rangers didn't send him that lovely offer sheet?
Yeah.
I mean, look, let's be honest. The Rangers are not the reason why the contracts got so out of control in the first place. It was all the other teams making crazy, ridiculous offers. I mean, the first one was the Paul Kariya contract when some team offered him $10 million a year.
Right.
I mean, yeah, the owners, and I've said this all along, the owners are their own worst enemy, almost to the point where the players are their own worst enemy. You essentially have two sides that do nothing but hurt themselves in more ways than I can count at the absolute least opportune time. I mean, you can go through it. Not 94, 95. The league is on the verge of a multi-billion dollar TV deal from ESPN and Fox combined. Lockout screws it up. They both offer less money. The NHL is forced to take it. 0405, same kind of thing. On the verge of a pretty nice contract. Lockout. Wipes out the whole year. They go on this wacky revenue-sharing contract with Comcast, Flyers, NBC. They finally get out of that, get into a not a great 10-year, $2 billion TV rights negotiating deal, but it's at least they're making money off of it. And again, you have a lock-in.
Is it true? I don't know much inside stuff, so I'm just curious if it really is true about this alleged kind of group of owners who are considered far more conservative and sort of have their say. I know Dan Boyle was talking about that the other day. I mean, I know that there are long-term families that are involved, you know, and maybe some of the original six ownership groups that they're still around might be part of that conservative core. I don't know. Is anybody know if that's true or not, if that's accurate? That there is that kind of division within the ownership.
Well, if there isn't, then why do you need $1 million fine for saying anything?
It does seem weird. I mean,
I'll just put that one out there.
If I'm wrong on this, let's see. Jimmy Devolano and the Wings are fined what, $250,000? I think somewhere mm-hmm. in that neighborhood. I can't remember if the Flyers were fined. I know they supposedly violated and were caught, but I didn't see the fine yet. Now, I'm wondering if they'll actually be forced to pay that one. Somehow I doubt it.
Well, it just seems to me that there's a legacy within this league there's a legacy of competition, but as well a legacy of not really wanting to pay the players that much. And I know that was the case a long time ago, but at the same time, it seems like the amount of money that's spent now on salaries is so over the top that if you apply that to any other business model, it'd be a disaster. You know,
that's right.
And so, some mentioned earlier, you know, dropping this idea of a CBA altogether, and that's what I think of when I hear Don Fehr talking about wanting, you know, a free market for salaries. I mean, to my mind, there was a free market, and that was before the first CBA in the 70s, and that was when each guy went to the ownership and negotiated his contract individually. You know, and that didn't necessarily work out very well for the players. But at least that way, maybe there would be, maybe there would be some more salary control that way. I don't know. But I think one thing's for sure, and that's that these CBAs aren't necessarily working. And someone mentioned earlier that we're going to be in the same spot again in 6-7 years. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably true. That's why I don't understand why Gary Bettman keeps coming up with these proposals that are, you know, just really just modifications of, you know, the agreement that came out in 2004, 2005, which clearly hasn't worked. And there are some changes that he wants to make. But when Donald Fehr starts talking about wanting to, you know, create a league that's viable for X number of years and for these players, for their brothers and whoever else they're talking about being able to play in this league, part of that makes sense to me because I see it in baseball. I mean, baseball is going to have some 20-odd years now of labor, you know, peace
right.
when their CBA is up next. And as much as I don't like Donald Fehr, I think that he's, you know, as responsible for that as anybody. But I just don't know if you can transfer that business model over to hockey. It's just not that kind of money, you know, in hockey as there is in baseball. So it seems like a disconnect. It's just not going to fly, you know.
But there has to be some willingness. I mean, there has to be some willingness by the top-tier teams in terms of operating income and wealth to share the wealth. Mm-hmm. I mean, without that, the league's doing. I mean, you look at what Toronto has done in operating income and how much they've increased their equity, and a few other teams, the Rangers, a couple of others. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's nuts. And if there isn't some way if they don't come up with some way to even that out, it's not going to happen in this CBA. But then hopefully they'll have 6 or 7 years to figure it out. You know, then. Yeah, I agree.
Why wouldn't they be able to go in? I mean, I know in baseball they went into the CBA a number of times and renegotiated aspects of it. I mean, that was just something they seemed unafraid of doing.
Well, the NHL's done that too. I mean, remember the Kovalchuk rule was something that was renegotiated into the CBA.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they've shown that they're willing to do it. It's only when it serves their interest.
Well, that's it. I mean, what you need to have is a standing process. You've got a committee that has, you know, players and owners and so forth, and you're looking at this stuff on an ongoing basis. You know, mm-hmm. from the minute mm-hmm. the new CBA is in effect, you meet quarterly, you meet semi-annually to start off with. Who cares? But you know, you're identifying these issues. You're exploring structural changes. You're doing all this stuff so that, you know, it's not like, oh, hey, son of a bitch, this contract expires in 45 days. Maybe we should have a chat.
You know? And it's true. I mean,
you know, look at the time, got to go. I mean, you know.
Wow, who knew?
If I handled negotiations that way, my job, I'd be fired.
and that's the problem. I mean, you almost wonder, it's like, if the that's a case where I kind of blame the players because they figured, oh, we got time. We have time. You know, and the owners, to a lesser extent, said, October and November, we're not too worried about that.
Oh, and could you show up at the table before 1 p.m? I mean, I hate to just, to disrupt their beauty sleep, but Jesus Christ. I mean, whatever happened to the, show up at 7 a.m. and, lock the door and don't come out until you got an agreement.
Well, whatever happened to a deadline? I mean, come on. I had a deadline to respond to things. I mean, these things just seem to – I remember reading a tweet a while back. I forget who it was, but it was like, Donald Fear can't meet on Tuesday. You know, what else is he doing? What other job has he got going on? You know, how many jobs does this guy have to hold down? You know, I'm thinking he has to hold down one job, you know. I mean, he ought to be able to meet when, it's amazing to me. And also shocked me, too, when both guys, we're not going to take salaries, Bettman and Fear. Why not? You're the only ones that are working, you know? Now's your chance to really earn money. It's just the absurdity of it all.
And this is the fun part in this. Okay, don't take your salary. How about putting it to, say, a charity?
Yeah, something.
I'm just putting it out there. I mean, 16 million.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying Gary Bettman $8 million a year, and yet, he's pissed so many people off that he's got to have Daly as his mouthpiece. I mean, really? I mean, if Bill Daly is the preferred voice of the NHL, this ain't good, lads.
Why has he been doing the press conferences lately? Is there a reason why?
I assume it's because the focus group said, you know what, Gary, you piss people off. Shut up.
And it's not that Bill Daly is really all that much better. Because I can tell.
You can go to any site, and look for a shot of Gary Bettman, say it's TSN or whatever, and it'll say something like Labor Talks, progress X amount or whatever. Any shot of Gary Bettman, and he is always frowning. He's got an evil look on his face. I mean, I'm sure that there are other pictures of the guy, but he is always portrayed as the guy is this evil, this evil genius who kind of has no concept of hockey, but he's a hell of a businessman, and he can, he's just always painted in awful light, and he deserves some of it, but certainly not all of it by any stretch, I don't think.
Yeah.
On that note, gentlemen, I got to book out. So thank you very much for the opportunity. I'll listen to the rest of the show. Thanks, guys. Take care.
That's kind of where we're at right now. And it's frustrating. I mean, every person I talk to says the same thing. We have to do something you know, the revenue sharing. We have to at least work on it on this CBA.
This is what I don't understand: is how all you guys can say that you suspect that the league, that hockey is going to be by December or by the Winter Classic when at this point one side has to give in at some point. And I mean, really, the league has made some movements. I know, you know, sort of closer to certain figures, but they still claim they're not speaking the same language. I don't see either side really making that concession because what it means is that, you know, that the reports are going to be that, well, the players caved or, you know, whatever. And can you honestly see that? I mean, that was not Donald Fear's persona for 25 years in baseball. Why is it going to be that way during his 1 year in hockey? It's not. It's not.
Well, the way this gets settled, I mean, if it's going to settle, the way it gets settled is the owners say, well, okay, we'll honor these contracts in some sort of more acceptable way. And Fair says, okay, we'll move to 50%. And we, in the interest of the game, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to hold the fans hostage anymore. We're going to do this. And now we're going to look more fundamentally at the structure during the term of this CBA and come up with something.
Yeah.
That's how both sides do it.
If Donald ever says, in the interest of the game, I'll be surprised.
Well, yeah.
Says those words. Yeah, I know.
But it's funny because when everything happened with baseball in 94, it's the very thing he was actually doing. He just never said it.
Right. And I mean, that's how this gets settled. And if it gets settled that way, it takes one email. I mean, everything's there. Not much has to change.
They're close.
Yeah, and I think that's the single point that makes me optimistic is that things are there. Not everything has to change. Yeah, there are things that could be improved on. But right now, I think they could both be closer to a deal than they're willing to publicly admit. I think Bettman and Daly, behind closed doors, are willing to give up more. And I think Donald Fear is willing to accept less right now. I think it's posturing. I think neither one of them wants to blink. And it's the game of chicken that's delaying things. I think ultimately, and Chris, we've said it for weeks, that you know, if we know the train is eventually going to hit the 50-50 station, why do we have to go this circuitous route to get there, and why can't we
but just... Hasn't it already hit that?
It hasn't. I'll be honest, and you guys can disagree with me with this. It really has not hit yet. PR-wise, it has. But the reality is it really has not come to a true 50-50. Each side still has a differing view on what 50-50 means to them, and they have to come to some kind of agreement there.
Well, if we're
the
just
other
a question
thing
semantics.
That I noticed in all of this is the following. This is one of the more bizarrely intricate games of chicken that I've ever seen. Because, like you said, there's so many different sides to this that you have owners playing chicken with other owners at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're so fundamentally close to a deal, they can't even see it.
And this gives you optimism that this is going to get worked out. To me, that just says there's no reason for optimism whatsoever. I mean, a lot of owners last time at least said, you know, we're actually doing better without you know, staging hockey games than we are with. And I had no reason not to believe
that. Well, at the end of the day,
that.
It's a hockey league, though, and everybody knows this. And, you know, I mean, okay, then you want to fold the league, go ahead and fold the league. But, I mean, they'll never do that because their only way of making money is the equity in the franchise. So that's how all these owners, except for very, very few, are going to make their money is when they sell the franchise. Yeah. Or they leverage the equity to borrow against it. They're not making their money operationally, except for Toronto and a couple of others. That's how they make their money. Yeah. These guys did not make their money owning hockey teams.
Right. No one ever got rich by owning a hockey team.
I mean, this money, they're losing money, but this is more a tax shelter for the money they make elsewhere.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So operationally,
day-to-day, they could give a shit about this, okay?
Uh-huh.
You know, if they lose, you know, I mean, they don't want to lose too much money. I mean, you start losing $20 million a year, I mean, that hurts to anybody. But, you know, they lose $2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million dollars a year. Yeah, you know, for most of them, that's just, I mean, the depreciation and other write-offs, and that takes some money off of the money they make on their other businesses, and it's not that big a deal, as long as the equity keeps going up in the franchise.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
That was why I wanted to bring Jeff on, because and you don't want to say it in this way, but the elephant or the devil in this case is in the details, and there's a lot of details that people don't know.
Jeff, that article you wrote for Overtime is so precise. It's like I said, I had to read it a few times because
I had to write it a few times.
I'm not surprised. Congratulations, by the way, I have a problem with mixed metaphors. You held the same metaphor all the way through, which was very admirable, honestly, and it didn't read quite well that way too. But particularly with the numbers, it seems a little head spinning, but you really bring it around. And to me, that what I came out of that with was, again, my God, this is so screwed up. This is such a sick league, and it can't. No wonder that, you know, I mean, I remember at the beginning of the summer when players are saying, you know, oh, you know, they're making money. They're just saying they're not. Here's the thing. If you're making money, you're not going to shut down a league. You're not going to shut down your business. If you are making money, you know, if you aren't making money, then you might, you know. And so to me, that was just a common sense thing, you know. And then reading your article, it just confirmed for me that all the competing interests and the fact that the numbers don't add up anywhere, and is there any fixing this league? Well, there must be. And that's just hope.
I mean,
but at the same time, it's a mess. I mean, it's a mess.
But why doesn't somebody mention to owners, hey, why don't you just, you know what, we'll take less in salary, but why don't you put together a bonus plan using that equity?
Sure. That's clever.
It's funny, but and I saw this in two different ways, but yet they pretty much meant about the same thing. And these are guys that have diametrically opposed views of the league, in a sense. Bill Clement and Doc Emmerich, who respect each other, but I can't exactly say they like each other to a point. And it goes back a ways. Interestingly enough, kind of said the following. In both, you know, it was like A and B, and it kind of met in the middle, and it was interesting. How hard is it for these guys to take this 12.3% this alleged 12.3%, give it back to the owners, and have a tie into revenue sharing? Not that hard.
Right.
I mean, and the owners say no. I mean, it's hysterical. It's like you have a chance at a breakthrough here, and it's like,
But that's where you really need to be a fly on the wall, because I can't believe that a majority of the owners independently polled would say no.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the players wholeheartedly accept the deal.
I mean, this strikes me, and I see it all the time in the legal business, right? This strikes me as the attorney telling his client, these guys are just bluffing. I can get more.
Okay? It's true, though.
You know, but when I go into a settlement conference with somebody in a big case, I always demand that the client be present on the other side. Because I want to see their face when they hear their lawyer turning down X amount of millions of dollars.
Right, right.
You know, and it's amazing how seldom that really happens.
Yeah, I mean, I dealt with it on a personal level where, and this is funny but true. It goes in any way in the legal system. You have parties A and B. And here's where the make whole provision comes in. You can apply it anywhere in a comical sense. A wants this, B wants that. If we can get to this and that, we have an agreement.
How do we get there? Okay. And literally, I had to negotiate something out of unfortunateness, where I was paying too much of, in this case, child support. And I was getting raked through the coals from my own lawyer. Since my own lawyer thought that, hey, you know what? You can pay for everything at once. That way you don't have to be nickeled and dimed to death. The reality was he was nickeling and diming me, and then my ex was nickeling and diming me on top of that.
Yeah. Well, that's,
I mean, this is kind of what
the
NHL...
That's the old car salesman trick, right? Just don't worry about the price of the car. Look at this monthly payment.
Yeah, and it's basically how it was presented. I was stunned. It's funny. I fired the lawyer. My mom got angry because it was somebody she personally hired. So what the heck are you doing? And I'm like, look, I'm being bilked both ways here. I don't think you realize this. And ultimately... You know, a few years later, and a lot of pain later, it was settled to where now I don't owe squat.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, I was able to get over on their lawyer because I acted in my own interest.
This problem of not representing, you know, the people that you're supposed to represent, I mean, mm-hmm. Donald Fear, in my mind, has a problem with that. I mean, this is a guy who fought drug testing, tooth and nail, not because he polled the baseball players. He didn't poll them and say, where do we stand? Do we want to privately do this so that you can prove that you're clean at some point down the road? No, he said, this is an invasion of privacy, that's that, and I'm shutting it down. And now we have an entire generation of baseball players that all have to be considered dirty because he misread his constituents. So to me, he's capable of anything. And he was hard-headed as hell about drug testing. And mm-hmm. I can tell you that I'm sure the guys like Jeff Bagwell and other players would love to be able to say, look, Hall of Fame, I can prove to you that I'm clean by this test, if Donald Fear had allowed for it. But he didn't. So
yeah.
To me, this is a guy who goes on principle. He hates to lose. He absolutely hates owners. And I just don't see him rolling over in any way, shape, or form. I mean, Gary Bettman talks about how him and Bob Goodenow were, you know, good friends, and they could go out. It wasn't personal. You know, I don't see those two having this kind of relationship, even if assuming that Bettman's being honest about that. I think it's adversarial, confrontational.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's going to take an adult to rise and, you know. I mean, unfortunately, I don't know if the players realize, hey, you know, you can get rid of Donald Fear. You can. You know, I mean, you voted him in, you can vote him out, but they never will. Yeah. I mean, at least not anytime soon. I mean, I think that he saw hockey coming a mile away. He took this, you know, what was it? Originally, he was just sort of I'll be an advisor, unpaid. I'm just going to stand by the side here. Oh, yeah, I know you got a CBA coming up, 2.3, you know, all the billion-dollar revenues. But I'll just be your advisor. Hey, look at me. I'm the executive director. Hey, that's funny. No, nothing like that happens to this guy. He's very calculated. I mean, he saw this coming a mile away, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't see him, you know, I don't see him making those kinds of maneuvers and not planning to win. And for him, winning is not going to be any sort of concession. Even though... the things that were won in 2004 or what, you know, that they've managed to accumulate, like, you know, 57% of hockey, you know, those things are, in my mind, they may be bargaining chips, but, you know, they're nothing that necessarily the players have. They had them. That was the old CBA. It's now defunct, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I don't see what, I've never seen what kind of, you know, point of view or what kind of position he has to bargain from. I mean, when they launched that thing up in, was it Alberta, trying to get the lockout illegal, to me that was just a sign of desperation. It's like, what, we don't have any leverage. What, let's find some leverage, you know. Maybe it's illegal, you know. So at the same time, I'm not sure that Donald Fear is the kind of guy who would admit that. So to me, This is all just going nowhere. I hope it proves me wrong, but I don't see it happening. And what, Chris, you said that you met Donald Trump before?
Yeah.
Nice guy or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird how you wind up meeting people in New York City. But I have this bad habit of running into people that I should not run into.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of the reason that the fans are always on the players' sides is because they think they know the players.
Right.
And I think that
they
there's
really
some
don't.
Sort of a personal connection with them when most of them don't. Most of the players don't really care, you know, in terms of like individual fans or whatever. I mean, the personal connection is what screws up a lot of people's perspectives. And I'm not saying that about
right.
you and Donald Fear. I'm just saying that in terms of supporting the players. And that's why almost from the get-go here, granted, I haven't been entirely consistent, but I mean, as far back as in June, I was definitely thinking to myself, the players are really asking for things here that they have no business asking for. In my mind, it was like, you know, the owners have a league, you know, Gary Bettman's got 800 jobs of hockey that pay around $2 million on average per year. He doesn't have any more jobs like that. He doesn't have any more that pay any more than that. You can take it or leave it. And that was my perspective. And even though it's jumped around, it's back to that now. You know, I don't have any true sympathy for the players in that regard.
It kind of breaks. It's funny, Ross, that it breaks out pretty much to 50-50, to be honest.
The
what? $3.3 billion league, you're paying out about $1.6 to $1.65 billion in salary. Bang, there you go.
I mean, I wish that my salary was somehow tied into the revenue where I work. I mean, my God, that'd be fantastic. I would make a lot of money, and I don't even have to be, you know, I don't even have to have an executive position. I don't have to be a high scoring center, you know, and yet I still get 57%. That's crazy. I'm sorry. I don't know where this entitlement comes from, but it's outrageous. It's not in the traditions of hockey, I guess, is the general point I'm making. I mean, I don't recall, you know, players ever. I mean, yeah, I know the players got taken advantage of for many, many years and all that, and it's a reasonable argument that you can do something that you love and all that and still get taken advantage of. But you know, it's no reason to not, you know, lace up the skates and get out there for $1.5 million, $2 million, $3 million. All these little things that we're talking about, all these little details, are things that, you know, maybe 1% of the players in the NHL either understand or care about. But who does care about them? I mean, it's funny to me that Donald Theer and Gary Bettman, two hockey outsiders, you know, can be the guys controlling hockey.
Scary.
At least Bob Guggenheim played hockey. You know, I mean, he played through college, I think. You know?
But he did at least play hockey. And it's
I think it's
said,
something, you know?
Hey, guys, I got to take off, unfortunately, but I've enjoyed it.
Okay. I can't thank you enough, Jeff. Anytime you want to come on at all, just let us know. And, you know, hey, it's coming your way too, Jeff. So, you know, you may get some fringe effects of.
Hey, it's supposed to snow here tonight. So.
Yeah, I mean, what the heck? I got a friend of mine down south of Elkins that's supposed to get 20 to 30 inches of snow. So. Oh boy.
Yeah, Jim. Go figure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Have a good night.
Right.
And definitely we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Welcome. But, you know, Ross, we lost. Josh literally said a wind gust knocked him off, literally.
You what?
A wind
oh, really?
Gust knocked him off the line.
All right.
And
right,
I
well,
believe it because – I'm telling you right now, I can hear it, but you know, buffeting the house. It's not raining, mind you, yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the wind
Gosh,
has been pretty. Yeah, the wind's pretty much been about 30 to 40 mile per hour gusts since about noontime, and gradually
really?
It's starting to edge up. But I'm going to say aloha.
Okay.
Try to ride the stinker out. I don't know how this is going to go. I told Bruce. If I can get to edit it before the power goes out tomorrow, I can. I'll try my best.
Right.
But basically, you know, and I'll say this, you know, obviously, thanks, you know, thank you as always for coming on, and thanks to Timmy and Josh as always. Until next week, I got to come up with something to play here, just because I would not feel right. All right, here we go. I found this one. This is the only way I could say goodbye to the show, and this is truly mean, but this is what I feel about the negotiations, folks, right now. And we will see you next week. For everybody here at the Hockey Writers, you're on the East Coast. Stay safe. Most importantly, if it looks like it's getting really bad, don't go outside. Please, unless you're like me and you have some side little thing to do for NewJersey.com. Don't try this at home. Stay safe. Hopefully we won't lose power. We'll see you on the other side come midweek or so. Like I said, for Chris and the gang, you can download the show via iTunes, also via thehockeywriters.com and blogtalkradio.com/THW Live. For all the gang, have a great night. Here's what we think of the CBA negotiations as of now. And, of course, happy Halloween. Have a great night, everybody.